Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to The Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners, macabre murders and captivating crimes from across the centuries, and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 194.
Nicely done, 194.
Yes, 194.
194.
194. Yes, many, many nines.
More one.
Yeah.
not that many.
What I meant to say was, we're racing through the 90s, right, and okay. I did not
say
that
there are many
right.
Nines in 194. There's one nine.
I see them at night. How are you, Nick?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm
mad.
I'm all right.
Insane.
Yes, I'm fine. I'm not. I'm unwell for reasons this week. Lady-related reasons. But I'm feeling a bit better. I'm feeling much better than I was earlier. If we had tried to record this during the day, which
it's
we
because I'm a delight. You say
you have been very cheery.
Say very cheery.
You've been making me laugh a lot.
Infectiously cheery.
Yeah, you've been very nice. What's going on?
Oh, I'll phone you at you later. Don't worry.
Okay. Yes, you're in fine mood. You need a glass of wine.
That's because I got a bucket of wine.
Getting absolutely stuck in with the lovely, lovely wine.
Quite right.
Wonderful. Any poisonings this week?
Oh, probably.
Probably? Yeah. Oh, you can't be expected to keep count of these
things.
Exactly.
No, indeed. I've got far too many things to do.
You need to get you a diary.
Yes.
For your poisonings.
Some sort of abacus. On the wall.
An abacus.
My fancy flicking the beads. Bing, bing, bing.
It's good to have a hobby, isn't
it?
And we'll also get you one of those fun clay slates that you can carve the words into as well.
I live by myself, okay? I need to make my own fun.
Well, people listening to After Dark will know what that's about as well. Well, speaking of being delightful and having buckets of wine, I think it is time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers.
We probably should. I'm going to talk really slowly so I can get
pull up the list.
Oh, now I found the list. Oh, yes.
Did you smoke a big bag of crack?
Big bag of crack. Big bag of crack. No idea what's going on. Something in that wine.
Maybe. It's because I'm sober. It's like, what the fuck?
So you don't notice, because normally we're both pissed at this point.
Yes, we've normally had like a cocktail down.
Yeah, exactly. So this is what I'm normally like. You're just seeing it from a sober point of view.
No, you're more hyper than normal.
Anyway, thank you to Jerry.
Lisa S.
To Gina Mook.
To Death by TBR.
To
lovely.
Jackie.
To Panda Triss.
To Udalale. I like that. Udalale.
Oh, golly, what a day.
Udalale. Is that a Maui Pomeroy Prince thing?
Excuse me. It's from Robin Hood. Udalale, udalale, golly, what a day.
That's it. I was thinking.
Well, I'm assuming.
Well, for some reason I had in my head it was the, you know, the merry, when they're doing the merry round in the animated bit of Mary Poppins. They sing a round. Anyway, none of that. It's not any of that.
It's their name. And to Katie Brooks.
There we go.
There we are. quite the roller coaster we went on with the names there.
Got the colour eventually, but you're all marvellous. Have some wine.
Have some wine, you lovely, sexy, sexy Patreon subscribers. We had fun on Patreon this week. We had quite the wonder that we talked about. That threw you completely.
Oh, it did.
Yes. That was a great little story.
I actually remembered it.
A little theme going of, you know, things that may have happened or may not. I can't give too much away in case anyone hasn't listened to the episode, but it was the...
It's a good one.
The Campden Wonder back in 1660.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, not one I'd come across. No, I like that. You surprised me.
If you want to know what the hell we're talking about, please consider joining us on patreon.com/thepoisonouscabinet. That's our subscriber channel where you get extra episodes every single week, as well as bags of bonus content. Whether you are an arsenic aficionado or a cyanide connoisseur, where you get lots of extra things. It's a lovely place, a lovely community, and we have book club coming up. And Nick has just caned his second glass of wine very quickly. You strawpedoed that.
My wine, please.
Splishy splashy. And it's your episode.
Might be your one soon.
Nick has a lie down while I read words and try not to throw up.
Very well written episode, so yeah, I'm sure you'll be fine.
We also have a shout out this week.
Ooh, hurrah.
We have a shout out from wonderful, lovely Jess to Derek.
Hello.
Her husband, Jess and Derek, just got married. They have just gotten married. They got married on the 29th of February. They took advantage of the leap day, the leap year.
We won't get married. Oh, actually married on the 29th?
Actually married, yes. Oh. You can do it.
Yes, you can. I mean, great for anniversary presents.
Exactly.
I've been going to buy you one for 4 years now. Brilliant.
Well, the way they put it was that they love the idea of 3 years out of four, they can pick whatever they want to have their anniversary.
Oh, nice. Like
which
it.
Is really nice. They've like been it. Together for 16 years. Jess has listened to the show a couple of times now. I think she's on a second row round. But Jess wanted to say to Derek, to say how happy she is that they are married. Their life is already amazing. They're going to get even more amazing together. And she wishes him paste on toast and chocolate vodka.
Right.
I suspect that they will take meaning from that.
Yes, I'm sure, but that sounds horrible.
No, it's two separate things.
Oh, not in a blender.
Oh, it might be.
No.
But do we need more details?
No, we don't. We don't. You do you. Enjoy. Have a lovely time. Congratulations.
Well, congratulations on your marriage and on your future anniversaries and all of your chocolate vodka. Well, Nick, are you ready?
God, no.
To drink cocktails, talk about poison?
I want more wine.
That's a cocktail. You've mixed it up with grapes and shit. Or we could drink poison and talk about cocktails.
Is it wine?
Is wine.
Is it wine? Is it poison wine?
It could be poison wine.
Let's have that.
Shall we go with the first one? Okay. Shall we see? You can have more wine. Yay. And cocktails. I will sip a cocktail very slowly. And watch this unfold. Ironically, someone was asking us today, going, have there been any really drunk episodes? And I'm like, yes, no, this one.
No, it's fine.
Let's go with the first one. Hooray, hooray,
Height
hooray.
Professionalism, I think you're fine.
It is Nick's story this week. And we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell. And it will flavor our cocktail of the week. Nick, this week's secret ingredient is...
It's some delightful taxes.
Taxes.
Ooh, that's... Who doesn't love some tax?
Yes, quite a few people have gone, oh, that reminds me, I have to do my tax returns. Yes.
Reminds me, I hate fucking tax returns.
Yes.
Really annoying.
Yes, you do a lot of them and then they go wrong.
They go horribly, horribly wrong. And I can't fix them, so... We'll discuss that later. Yeah.
Oh, good. You're breaking that to me now about our business. Okay, right. But taxes. And also that's quite nicely fitting for... That's a really weird link that I'm going to make. The Patreon, who was Oodalally from Robin Hood, and they had to collect the taxes. They were taxing the poor.
Yes.
That's why Robin Hood was emerged as a fox.
Yes, he emerged as a fox.
Yes.
From Sherwood Forest.
Exactly. There was no Robin Hood. It was just a fox.
Just a fox
that everyone worshipped.
Nice. A sexy, sexy fox.
He's a very sexy fox. There we are. That's my obscure link for the day. Wonderful. With tax, then, as the ingredient, the inspiration, the horror.
The horror, indeed.
What have you come up with?
We are going to have a death and taxes.
Death and taxes. I said I was convinced that you wouldn't be able to find anything that was actually taxes. I was like,
death
that's
and
weird.
Taxes.
Ooh, death and taxes. Well, they go together beautifully.
All that they do.
Is it maybe death or taxes?
Entirely unescapable, as is this cocktail.
Okay. Oh, good. That bodes well. I'm excited. I think it is high time for us to slink into the poisonous cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
So, Nick, death and taxes.
Death and taxes.
Together at last. It's a brown drink.
Desperately brown.
It is, and very brown, actually.
Very brown.
I'm worried. Should I be worried? I don't know. Brown rarely steers us wrong.
This is true.
Are you excited for this one?
I'm intrigued by this one. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. Honestly.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's I feel it's going to be spirit forward, shall we say. So prepare yourself.
Right, good. I've been throwing up today and have only just managed to line my stomach with a small wrap. But, you know, I'm confident in my abilities. Right, okay. Let's dive in.
Let's give it a go.
Okay, so death and taxes.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Spirit void. Oh yeah, that's got some.
That's got some cojones.
That's got some kick.
That has. That has stuff in it.
It has indeed. Got stuff.
I'm frightened. It stings the nostrils, Nick, in a good way.
I quite like that.
I do like it. It's very spirit forward.
Yeah, very, very much so.
I'm trying to work out what's in it, though. Okay, so let's make some guesses. Bourbon?
Nope.
Oh, wait a minute. Calvados?
Nope.
Fuck you. Scotch whiskey?
Yes. A blended.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Nothing to beat.
Is there red vermouth in this?
There is.
Yeah, okay. It's sharp, though. There's no citrus in this, is there?
There is not. No.
Maraschino? I mean...
No.
Oh, but you're like, no.
No, but...
Cherry? Brandy?
No. You're close-ish.
Ish. Brandy?
No.
Cognac?
No.
Is it a cherry adjacent? An apple?
No, it's not fruit named.
It's not fruit named.
No. But think sort of like brandy liqueuriness.
Benedictine?
No.
Not chartreuse?
No, not chartreuse.
Oh, thank God. The Chinar?
Nope.
The Strega?
A Grand Marnier.
Oh, there's oranges though, isn't it?
It's orangey. Orangey, well, fruity. I said fruity.
You said not fruity.
Did I say not fruity? I meant to say fruity.
Right. You can't be blamed for the wrong instructions.
No.
Well, Grand Marnier in it. Oh, okay.
Grand Marnier.
Oh, God.
Grand Marnier.
Okay, anything else?
One more thing.
Bitters?
Well, that's, yes, that and another thing.
Gin?
Yes.
Fuck. What? I was guessing.
No, gin.
Yeah. You're going to die.
It's
going to
fuck you up.
Oh, this will kill or cure me, to be honest.
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah, it will dull the pain.
Kill or cure most things, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that is spirit forward.
I mean, it's potent, but it works.
To say the least, it is.
I mean, I like it.
I like it. The third sip is lovely.
It's fairly good. It's very, very nice.
It's very nice. It's a good sipper.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, it's not one.
It's not one to start a party with.
But you could start a party with this. Have one of these and it's going to be a party somewhere.
This is true.
In your mouth. Lovely. Mm. Okay. So that, well, death and taxes.
Death
Jesus.
And taxes.
You need a stiff drink to get through both.
Well, quite.
I mean, if you've died, then you don't need a stiff drink. Maybe if you've watched someone die, then one of these would help.
Well, that's jolly.
Well, I'm just saying, it doesn't mean that you're upset about it. I'm just like, it's a bit of a shock. Like, I'll need a stiff drink to get over this.
Let me mix up a cocktail while I'm here.
Exactly. Don't call the ambulance. Give me a drink. I need to steady my nerves before I dial.
Yes, exactly. What have you got in your drinks cabinet?
What did they have in their drinks cabinet? Now I have full access to it. And also taxes. Yeah, they suck. Lovely. Well, that's a resounding success. I can only express my joy and excitement for what is going to come next. Wonderful. Well, with the death and taxes firmly in hand for the first time, is it time for a story, Nick?
Probably.
Yes. Yay.
Probably. Yes.
Tell a dying woman a story.
So today,
yes,
we have the story of William Brodie.
Uh-huh.
Deacon William Brodie, no less, to give him his full and fancy title.
Uh-huh.
Now, William is born in 1741.
Ooh, going back. Nice.
Going back a bit. Now, to a very, very, very respectable and a very middle-class family in Edinburgh.
Oh, nice. Love
yes,
it.
Yes, we're up to Scotland. Both of his grandfathers are lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
His father, Francis, runs a highly successful cabinet-making business.
Love a cabinet.
Yeah, absolutely. It caters to the fanciest of Scottish society.
Lovely.
So, yeah, really, yeah, top of the top there.
Yeah.
William is raised to follow in his father's footsteps. He's one of several children. I don't know how many children. I'm not even sure if he's the eldest son, but he is certainly the one who has shown considerable skill in his father's craft, that he is going to inherit the business. He is going to inherit everything from his father. So, yeah, he works alongside his dad, and when his father does die, in 1780, William inherits the lot.
Ooh, nice.
He gets...
so many cabinets.
Yeah, lots of his father's estate. Now, he has several houses, including quite a fancy townhouse on the Royal Mile.
Oh, wow.
In Edinburgh. So, yeah, we're talking serious money here.
People need cabinets.
But people need cabinets. So, yeah, I mean, he's got his father's business, his father's workshop, the main house and several other houses, plus £10,000 in the bank. And that's £10,000, 1780.
Can I just say that he now sounds very hot?
Yeah, I mean, this is enough to set you up for several lifetimes, really. So he is.
And yet, what will befall this man?
Well, indeed, we shall find out.
Yeah.
In some accounts I've read, William marries and has an undisclosed number of children. Yeah. In other reports, his sister comes to live with him.
Yeah.
With her family. In this grand townhouse on the Royal Mile. So we know there is a family of some sorts living in the house. We don't know if it's him and his wife or him and his sister and her family. It's sort of, yeah, a few different people say different things.
I'm sensing entirely sure that the children are not important.
The children are not necessarily important.
There were children nearby.
Neither is a wife, if really, in the story.
Well, so, isn't that cutting of you, Nick? The wives don't matter.
They don't matter, especially if they don't exist.
You know, the wives that don't exist need the most support.
I mean, William is now set as one of the preeminent businessmen of the city. Not only is he wealthy, but he's actually very skilled as well. He's very good at his job. Mm-hmm. So the who's who of the sort of Edinburghish society. the Edinburghish.
Edinburghish.
So they sort of clamour to commission William to create the very latest in furniture fashions.
Very
for
nice.
Them. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, he's got a big old waiting list of people wanting stuff.
Ooh,
from
this
him.
Is nice.
Not only is he a very skilled carpenter with his workshops and his workmen as well, but he also has a great interest in locksmithing. Latest sort of locksmithing sort of technologies and techniques and things, because he's making cabinets which have got locks in, so he's very interested in what is the latest thing.
I suppose you had something that's really intricate and really pretty, that would be appeal to him.
Exactly. So yeah, so many of his cabinets and his cupboards are fitted with intricate locks that he himself has sort of designed and sort of come up with. He swears they are unpickable, they are unbreakable, these locks that he has come up with. And many people, as well as many businesses, start to pay top dollar for what they think is top-notch security installed by William Brodie. This is the man who knows what he's talking about. His hobnobbing with the great and the good of society sort of introduce him to some really famous names of the day.
Okay.
I mean, he is supposedly friendly with the poet Robert Burns.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, they're there having a grand old time together. The painter Henry Raeburn. So they're all there sort of rubbing shoulders, talking locks, talking cabinets, the latest fashions from London and Paris and what have you.
The two conversations you can have. What's in fashion and do you enjoy a good cabinet?
Do you enjoy a good cabinet?
He's just standing while like these artists and poets are speaking in wonderful terms and of great beauty. And he's just going, look, this opens and closes.
This has got three drawers.
Whisper quiet.
Very, very
it's
fancy.
Very fancy.
It's very fancy. And
did Raeburn do a painting of an idiot
just
playing
a
with a
cabinet? It's like, oh, cupboards. So not only, say, is he hobnobbing with the great and the good, he is also a member of the Edinburgh Cape Club.
Ooh,
which is,
tell me everything.
Well, it's quite a sort of renowned club that had initially been founded many, many years before to support the Scottish militia. It'd been a way to sort of, rich and titled people to show their support and give money to the Scottish militia.
Okay.
It had sort of devolved into a rich drinking club by this point.
Don't they all? Yeah. But with capes.
With capes, exactly. They still have the capes, it's great.
really big capes.
All of the members had names, were given sort of pseudonyms based on sort of knightly titles. So they all Sir something.
Oh, really?
Each member was Sir, even though they weren't knights, they were, each member was Sir or other.
That's a bit like the Freemasons, though, isn't it?
It's that sort of thing. Mainly it was like every night in the pub, get pissed, play stupid pranks on people, and then go home. Sleep it off and do the same thing tomorrow.
So is it the Scottish Cape Society?
The Edinburgh Cape Club.
The Edinburgh Cape Club.
The club was actually, it was disbanded sort of like early 1800s or so. It's like, no, this is nonsense. What's going on? It was actually reformed in the 60s and it's still going.
No, fair so, enough. So, yeah. Absolutely
so
fine. Like,
that sounds great. Let's that get more great. Of that. So yeah, so off they go again. But yeah, he's one of these. But it only introduces him to more and more people who, yeah, who have got the money.
And the capes.
And they need to store their capes in cupboards.
He's cleaning up in there.
He is absolutely. He is cleaning up, indeed. All these connections help William up the ladder. Mm. And in 1786, he is appointed the Deacon of the Incorporation of Rights.
Right.
Rights spelt W-R-I-G-H-T-S.
Right. Oh,
so
okay,
as
okay,
in
okay.
as in shipwright, wheelwright. Yes. So basically he is the head of the city's guild of craftsmen.
Nice, nice.
So yeah, and which gives him the title of deacon. So it's not a religious title.
No, I was going to ask.
But yeah, the head of the city's craftsmen.
Oh, I really. Do like a guild.
Exactly. So this new role entitles him to a seat on the city council.
Mm-hmm.
So he is right at the top of respectable Edinburgh society.
Mm-hmm.
He is absolutely peak middle class. He's not nobility. He's not aristocracy.
I was going to say, he's not king.
No, but he's sort of like middle class, sort of
yes,
respectable
right
businessman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He is as
poster
high up
as
you're going to get, really. Yeah. But as he sits with his fellow councillors deciding on great city matters and things like
ooh,
that,
yes.
None of his peers really know the man that they have brought into their midst.
Oh, okay.
Deacon Brodie is a man who hid many secrets beneath his respectable and refined exterior.
Did he have skeletons in his cabinet?
Many skeletons in his cabinet. In many cabinets.
In many cabinets. So don't look at that.
And while he was a welcome guest in the grandest homes in the city, in the fanciest clubs and hotels, he has just a stronger reputation in the seedier side of
nice.
The city, in the darker streets, the drinking dens, the gambling houses,
yay.
That upstanding society men should never seen. Be seen.
No, no, they should
no,
never
no,
be
no.
seen there.
Absolutely never be seen there.
Ooh.
Now, certainly he wasn't the only rich young man who was wanted to indulge his vices. But William, as wealthy as he was,
yeah.
seemed entirely determined to live as outside of his means as entirely possible.
Right. How?
Well, he keeps two mistresses.
Oh, two?
He keeps two mistresses.
Yeah.
He sets them up each in their own home in very nice, respectable areas of Edinburgh.
Fair play.
They each have a regular income from William.
Great.
With one of the women, he has two daughters and a son.
Ooh.
With the other, he has two sons.
Oh,
and
more
he pays,
kids.
Yeah, so he's got five kids.
Right, that we know of.
In total. And they are completely unknown to each other. And completely unknown to anyone else in the city, really. So he keeps it a complete secret that he's got these two sort of families.
And they never
they never cross paths.
That's weird.
Yeah, they never cross paths. Yeah. They never realise about each other's existence until very, very, very much later down the story.
Ooh.
But yeah, but he is funding these two families.
Okay.
If that won't drain enough on his resources, William does enjoy a flutter.
Yeah, it is a flutter.
He does enjoy a flutter. Mm. Cockfighting and cards.
Oh, God.
Who doesn't love cockfighting and cards?
Who doesn't? I cards, yes. Seeing chickens kill each other, no. Not so much, no.
No, they appear to be something of a lifelong indulgence, really, from when he was quite a young man, sort of out in the town. Yeah, cockfighting and cards, they are the way to go. And they often got him into trouble with the people you really don't want to be in trouble with.
No. If you're gambling above your means, you need to pay up, sir.
I mean, his first close call comes in 1768. Now, he's 27. His father is still very much alive at this point.
Yeah.
So he's working with his father. He's not had the grand inheritances yet. He's living off a wage. That would have been perfectly acceptable.
Yeah.
A decent sum of money to live quite a comfortable life on.
If he were not a gambler.
If he were not such a gambler, indeed. But the cards got the better of him. And he owes a considerable sum of money to the types of men that you really don't want to owe money to.
Oh, dear.
He's getting desperate. Threats are being made. He can't go to his parents and ask for money. Why do you want money? Well, I've lost a shitload of cash.
Down the docks.
Down the docks. So that would not do at all well.
No.
Not if he's expecting to inherit the business and the house and the money and all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, so there's no way of just going, can I borrow some cash, please, really? So he's getting desperate. Mm-hmm. He likes his kneecaps. And a thought occurs to him.
Mm.
And he develops a cunning plan.
Great.
William and his father are installing some new furniture in a bank in the city.
Oh, my God.
They've been, yep, they've been commissioned. We'd like some new lovely desks, please.
Lovely desks. Not a safe.
Not a safe, no, just some lovely office very furniture nice, and things nice. in the bank. Now, the bank staff well know of the reputation and the upstandingness of the business, of the family. They are more than happy to let William and his father, Francis, free range of the place. You come and go, do as you need to do, measure up, install, whatever you need to do.
Yes.
You come and do it, absolutely. They are left unattended around the bank in various offices and such. Fine, no bother at all. William takes advantage of this rather lapse security and makes a wax impression of one of the bank keys that is hanging just on a hook in one of the offices.
Ah, yes. Yep. Top-notch security there.
Top-notch security there. Yeah, the bank key just hanging on the hook there. Just gets a little block of wax, makes a nice impression of the key. By night, he uses that mould to fashion himself a set of keys for the bank. He breaks in, steals £800.
Oh, my God. Just walks out.
And walks out. Locks up behind him.
Yeah.
No one is any the wiser.
Do they not have a night watchman or anything?
Well, they must do, but he manages to evade the night watchman and say he's not making any noise. There's no smashing of glass or anything
he's
like
the keys.
That. So he lets himself in, takes some cash, and off he scarpers.
Lovely.
Marvellous. He goes, he pays off his debts. The next morning, the bank is in uproar. This money is missing. What the hell's going on? How did these people get in? Everything is locked up as tight as it should be. Not for one minute does anyone suspect the cabinet makers that have been in. They've just been doing their job, going about their business. But the staff of the bank do start questioning them about, well, how can we improve our security? You know about locks. You know about all this stuff. What should we do so this doesn't happen again?
Yeah.
And of course, William is more than happy to give them great detail. So he gets a huge commission out of replacing all the locks in the building
that he's broken into.
So he's having a grand old time of it, trying not to laugh behind his hand.
That's brilliant. Yeah. That is genius. Love it.
So this £800 that would ordinarily, I mean, this is a huge sum of money. It would have, a working family could have lived off that for years.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a huge sum
of
money.
It just shows how much she's in debt.
It only just about clears William's debts.
Good Lord.
Now, of course, he could have used this experience as a as a learning sort of a
straight
learning
up
experience.
Right, yeah.
He got himself out of debt, get on the straight and narrow. All been good, fantastic. He's got a respectable job. He's got a good family. He could have a fantastic life. But where's the fun in that?
Yeah, he's just gotten away with robbing 800 quid.
This is a way to make fuckloads of easy money.
Yes. No more paying my debts in credenzas.
Exactly. Only a fool is going to give this up.
Yeah, great.
And so, William Brodie turns to a life of nighttime crime. By day, he is Deacon Brodie, craftsman extraordinaire, maker of exquisite things to the rich and powerful. His charming, cheeky-chappy routine delights his clients, who are only more happy to recommend him to their other rich friends. By nights, he robs them blind.
Excellent. Love it.
So, I mean, the nature of his work means that he spends time in his clients' houses. He's measuring up. He's installing things. While there, he's wandering around. He's talking to his clients and going, oh, that's fancy. Oh, that's quite nice. And he's making a big old list of things he wants to nick from these properties. And so he's left alone in these houses to do what he wants. It takes no time for him to swipe a set of keys, make a quick impression, do that. Or often he's actually employed there to change the locks of the place. So he lets himself in and out as he wants of all these places.
Walks away with
bundles of stuff.
Is no one at this point going, not necessarily putting two and two together, that he's doing the robberies, but going, your security, shit. Yes, you changed the locks and people still got in. Mm. Oh, for God's sake.
Well, what's quite cunning is he generally leaves several months between. So it's not like I've installed a lock the next night.
Next, yeah, because that would be a little bit like.
So he does go sort of like 4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
Between, like, we've installed everything. It's all sorted. Five months later, they get broken into.
Playing the long game.
By that point, no one is making the connection
between
the locks that they had installed half a year ago and this robbery that's taken place now. No one is making those links together. So he gets away entirely scot-free. He has been well and truly forgotten by that point. These late-night robberies become a Edinburgh mystery, really, for the next 20 years. And no one has a clue who is responsible. By the 1780s, William's criminal enterprise has really become a regular part of his life. It supplements his income completely. His father by now has passed. He has everything from him, but it is still not enough.
Greedy, greedy man.
Greedy man. Time for a break.
Time for a drink.
Time for a drink.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Nick, we have our drinks.
We have drinks.
You have a vat of wine.
I do.
Now I'm sipping away at the cocktail, which is very nice. It's going down very well.
Glad.
It's a good sip. For me, a sipper. A sipper. Lest I throw up.
For me, unfortunately, it was a knock it back and oh shit anymore. And then, oh God, this is going horribly wrong.
More inspiration juice.
Inspiration juice.
Podcast juice. So, William, it's just not enough.
He's stolen
and he's had more money than sense and more money than he'd ever use. But he's gambling it away. He's a man who likes the fast-paced life.
He wants more.
Wants more.
So he decides to expand his criminal enterprise.
Okay.
And he partners up with an English locksmith, a chap called George Smith.
That's a very English name. Was that his real name or was he just like, who am I? I'm George Smith.
George
Englishman.
Smith is on the run from crimes in England.
Okay.
So he's been convicted of burglary.
Yeah.
Lock breaking in England, so he's on the run. He's hiding out in Edinburgh, where the English won't find him.
They'll never think to look up there.
So he partners up with William Brodie.
Yes.
So George Smith is actually quite a skilled man in his own right, and he is a lot better at copying keys from the impressions that William makes. William, he makes these copies, but they're a bit rough and ready. George Smith is an artist at this stuff, so he nails it. In 1786, he then expands the operation again. He recruits a thief named John Brown.
They've all got very generic names.
Apart from Anthony Ainslie.
Oh, nice.
Ainslie, who's a shoemaker, down in his luck.
A shoemaker. How bad was he at making shoes?
I don't know.
To be down on his luck. People need shoes.
Yeah, but apparently not Anthony's shoes, apparently. Because he's... It's quite interesting because he's often employed as the lookout. So he's not got the sort of the locksmithing or lockpicking skills or the thievery skills that the others have.
Clearly.
So he's generally the lookout guy.
Yeah.
And he's probably getting a lesser cut of the of the loot.
All I need you to do is look at, maybe his one skill is that he can tell from, you know, half a mile away when he hears some footsteps, he knows... Brogues, size 5.
Maybe so, yeah.
He knows he's coming by the sound of their shoes. But he was terrible at making shoes.
He can hear the police coming from 5 miles away.
Boots on the ground, gentlemen. Oh, I like this ragtag group.
I mean, with his crew, he starts doing bigger and bigger jobs.
Yes.
They move away from housebreaking and start focusing on businesses.
Yeah, nice.
Now, these are probably more difficult to break into. They have more security, but if they can get in, they offer much more reward.
Yeah.
Really, there's a lot more there. At the time, it was the habit of Edinburgh shopkeepers to hang the keys of their premises on a nail at the back of their shop. So the records show. So yeah, so they would just, yeah, the door key would just be left at the back of the shop on a nail. Everyone knows where it is.
Right.
When they leave in the evening, get the key, lock up, off you go.
Off you go.
Brody would visit these businesses. Mm. Now, obviously, he is an upstanding member of society. The shopkeepers are like delighted.
Yes.
The councilman Brody, Deacon Brody, would come and patronise their own shop.
Yes.
So, yeah, they're more than happy. So, yeah, he would go there for a business discussion, just a chat about how's business, how's things going, stuff like that. When an opportunity presents itself, the shopkeeper has left the room for a moment, grabs the key off the wall, sticks it into a block of wax that he's got in his pocket, makes a nice impression, key goes back on the wall. Brody then, I must go, lots of other people to see. Love to the family.
Mwah, mwah, mwah.
Off he goes.
Yeah.
George Smith takes the impression, makes a perfect replica of the key. And then under cover of darkness, the crew will simply let themselves in.
Mm.
No smashing glass, breaking down doors or anything like that to wake the neighbours. Simply a quiet click of the lock and they're in.
Mm.
No one suspects Deacon Brody for a second. He is above suspicion.
Mm.
On several occasions, he is actually seen breaking in and a witness identifies William Brody as the culprit.
Yeah.
The police, yes, they dutifully investigate. A very embarrassed police officer arrives at the house, Brody's house, the next door. I'm so sorry, sir, I'm so sorry, but someone, some crazy drunken person, all this in a very broad Scottish accent, says, where were you last night? Brody replies, I was at home,
yes,
asleep with my family, nothing going on. Of course, absolutely.
Yeah,
of course you were. No questions asked, absolutely. The witness is sent away with a clip around the ear. How dare you defame the name of such a respected councilman?
Mm.
How dare you indeed? He could not possibly be involved in such things. You must be drunk.
Yes.
And just seeing nonsense.
Seeing who you want to. You've
exactly.
got a vendetta against
off,
this good man.
Off you go, you crazy, crazy witness.
Lovely.
The gang rob jewellery stores, silk merchants, tobacco merchants, anything they can get their hands on, and they generally transport their goods into England.
Mm.
So they take their goods from Edinburgh into England, where they're sold.
Very good.
Making a huge pile of cash.
I don't know why I'm praising these people. Yes, very good. That's exactly what I would do.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't fucking know.
Over the years, it is estimated that hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of goods are stolen and ferried out of Edinburgh by William Brody and his gang. After many, many years of success, so he's been going at this for, say, 20-odd years or so, all in all, he decides that it's time for the big one. It's time, we do this one, we can retire.
We do this one last job,
and we can retire. We're set for life.
Okay.
If we do this one,
what are they gonna? No, they're not.
They're gonna rob the Edinburgh Tax Office.
Okay, that's taxes.
That's taxes. Ooh. They're gonna rob all the taxes.
Okay, fair enough. I thought it was gonna be the castle.
No.
No,
they didn't rob the castle.
There, really, is there? No, yeah,
it was gummed. So I mean, at the right time, the Edinburgh Tax Office holds all the tax income for Scotland.
Nice.
I mean, this is a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
Tens, if not hundreds of thousands of pounds, sort of sat in a cellar in the tax office.
Yes.
They're nice. Thinking, well, it should be in the bank, but it's a lot of money.
Exactly. We'll put it in next
and
week.
Obviously it's all cash. Yeah. So it's like, that's a lot of effort to transport it to a bank. Mm. It'll be fine. A lot of it's transported down to London. It'll be going out to pay for things, what have you. So
and also the tax office
long.
Is dodgy. Yeah, back then. So, yeah, they're like, and we like nice things.
Yeah, exactly.
So, who will pay for our pheasant?
So yeah, there are huge piles of virtually untraceable cash sitting in this Edinburgh office. Mm. Right, that's what we're going for.
Do it.
We get that, we're set, we're good. Brody, using all his contacts, manages to obtain an impression of the key for the building. So he rocks up one day, city councilman,
yes.
is there, absolutely, I'm here for an inspection, I want to see what's going on, I want to see your taxes, all this. He manages to get in, he's got an impression of the key, gives it over to George Smith. George Smith makes a lovely copy. All is well. They can get in through the front door. They think with the skills they've got, they can make their way through any internal doors that may be locked, any safes or anything like that. They've got the skills between them to make short work of any sort of locks or anything there. So they'd be absolutely fine. On the night of the 30th of October, 1787, the gang use the copied keys to enter the building. They have timed their arrival for just after the last employee has left, but just before the night watchman arrives.
Right.
So a very small window of opportunity where the place is abandoned.
Yeah,
there's no one around.
They might look at the schedule there a little bit.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know who needed to get home for their tea that quickly.
So, yeah. so they've got the place to themselves. They make their way to the inner cashier's office, which is where the money would have been kept. But the security is tighter than they had imagined. Mm. Things have been upgraded since William Brody was last there. Mm. And they cannot break the lock leading into the cashier's office.
Right.
Yes, they could probably smash the door down. Not very subtle. They're trying to pick and gently get their way in. Rather than risk discovery, they abandon the plan.
Okay.
Right,
yeah,
we can't get in. We're not going to make a big deal of this, where we leave. They're going to return a different night, bit more scoping of the place. But on the way out, they discover that the key they had used to let themselves in, it won't lock the door as well, for some reason.
Oh,
there's something awry with the key, that it opens it, but it won't lock it.
Oh.
So they're forced to leave the main door of the tax office open.
Right.
And unlocked. Now, of course, as soon as the night watchman arrives, this is alarm is instantly raised.
The door,
the door is open.
Yeah, yeah.
The door is unlocked. Why is the door unlocked?
Yeah.
So alarms are raised. People are alerted. Although it says there's nothing obvious missing, nothing awry in the building.
Yes.
Still, this unlocked door is a cause of concern.
They suspicious.
They speak to the clerk, who's the last one to leave, and he says, no. 100%. I locked that door before I left. Look, here's my key.
Yeah.
I locked that door before I left, like
please
I have done a thousand other times. Yeah. Someone else must have let themselves in. Security is massively increased and a 24-hour watch set over the building.
Yes.
It takes 4 months for things to calm down. On the 5th of March, 1788, they return to the tax office. This time they're not taking any chances. They are armed with pistols, in case anyone gets in their way, crowbars, anything that they think they're going to need to make this work.
Yeah.
They're not worried now about not leaving any evidence or even any marks on doors. If they have to smash their way in, they're
going to
smash their way in and get the money and go. Open, they get into the building, and they break the door into the cashier's office. This is going to be the big one. £16.
No!
£16 in the office.
No.
And they hear a door open somewhere else in the building and someone walk down the stairs. A clerk, James Bonner, had returned after hours to pick up some papers that he had left in his office. And he spots a light in the cashier's office.
Yeah.
And he spots William Brody in the office. And he calls out to him.
Oh, hello.
Deacon Brody, hello. What the fuck are you doing here?
This is mad.
I mean, he has no idea why William is here at this time of night.
Doesn't he?
After hours. He doesn't even cross his mind that he's up to anything untoward.
He's
a respectable city councilman.
Yeah.
Why would he do such things? He must be here on city business, way above my pay grade.
Yeah.
So, it must all be above board. George Smith, one of the gang members, is crouching behind the counter with his pistol drawn. And he is ready to shoot this guy. Yeah. He's coming down the stairs. When William Brody, he steps out from the office as if he has every right to be there.
Yeah.
And he plays the part. He exchanged pleasantries with the clerk, with James. The man goes on his way completely oblivious as to what he has just walked into the middle of.
He's walking on his merry way, just like left the building down the street. Ah, oh, William Brody was in there in that look building after dark. It's a bit weird.
It's a bit weird.
Well, none of my business.
Exactly, none of my business. Obviously, city business. He's going to be there. So
also, it's either he's an idiot or he's very smart and he's gone, whatever this is, I do not want to be shot. I must get my glasses checked because I see nothing.
Leave me out of this, whatever is going on. Indeed.
But they're in there, £16.
They're in there, £16. Now, the gang is rather shaken by this interruption and decides, we need to get out of here.
Yeah.
Well, now we need to get out of here. Before this clerk does turn around and go, that's a bit weird. Wait a minute. and he tells someone what he's seen. They need to scarper. They leave with £16. Not realising that the same desk has a hidden compartment that contains over £600 in a secret drawer of this desk.
Rookie mistake. Look for the secret compartment.
Look for the secret drawer, absolutely. The next day, the gang reconvene to divvy up their rather pathetic bounty, really. The gang turn on William Brody. He was the one who had chosen the date. How could he not have known there was going to be fuck all money in on site? He was the one who was meant to know when the taxes were coming in, when the cash was going to be there, when was the opportune moment, and he has screwed up royally. They go their separate ways, but one of the gang, John Brown, has decided that this debacle is the end of the line. It's absolute nonsense.
Yeah.
He also knows that there is a reward out of £150 for anyone offering any information into a robbery that had been committed a year earlier, that the gang had committed a year earlier, but there was still this reward was out. On top of that, the reward comes with the king's pardon.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So if he says, yeah, it was me and it was these other guys,
he gets
off scot-free. He gets 150 quid to the bargain. The other guys go to the gallows, more likely. He decides, I want to be a free man. That night, he goes to the sheriff's office. He turns himself in. While he's giving his evidence, John Brown, he is smart enough to know that if he points the finger straight at a city councilman, he's probably going to get laughed out of the room.
Yeah, exactly.
They're probably going to go, what the hell are you talking about? That's utter nonsense. So he only identifies the other two, George Smith, the English locksmith, and Anthony Ainsley.
humble shoemaker.
The humble shoemaker, indeed. He identifies them as his co-conspirators. The men are arrested and they are held in the city prison. Now, as soon as William hears that one of his gang has turned traitor and the other two have been arrested, I think it's time for me to make a subtle exit.
Yeah.
I think it's time for me to make himself scarce. Quietly, one morning, he leaves Edinburgh and he makes his way down to London. Now, surely London is far enough. Back in the day.
Yes.
Edinburgh to London is a hell of a long way. I mean,
it takes 60 years.
It takes him 18 days to get from Edinburgh to London.
I mean, sometimes it feels like that when you're driving as well.
He's on, in coaches and walking and on horseback and things. So it takes him an awful long time. Mm. So I think by the time I get to London, no one is going to know who the hell I am. It's all going to be good. But no.
Yep.
In that time, his absence has been noted in Edinburgh.
Too big a coincidence.
Yeah, and thought that's very odd that this well-renowned councilman has just vanished. And now we've got three men in jail, all pointing the finger that he is the gang leader. He is the one behind all of this. So the authorities think, right, okay, we need to track this man down. He has got some questions to answer. From London, William makes his way down to Dover.
Lovely.
The White Cliffs. And there he boards a ship. Now, the ship, in theory, is heading back up to Edinburgh, around the coast.
Oh, okay.
Heading back up, and he gets on the ship. But while on board, he makes probably a healthy donation to the captain. And the captain stops off in Amsterdam.
Nice.
He crosses the channel, stops on the continent.
Booze cruise.
Yeah. Indeed. So yeah, so for William to escape. Mm-hmm. While William is on board the boat, he makes the acquaintance of a couple who are indeed on their way up to Scotland. Thomas Geddes and his wife mm-hmm. are on their way to Scotland. William gives Thomas some letters addressed to one of his mistresses. And Thomas, yes, agrees, as soon as I get to Edinburgh, yes, I will post these letters for you. Absolutely not a problem at all. The ship arrives rather unexpectedly at the port of Vlissingen in Amsterdam.
Very good.
Which is known as Flushing.
Yes.
In the UK, yeah. So, which I've not come across before. Yeah. So in English, known as Flushing. William disembarks. Much to the surprise of all the other passengers, going, I didn't know we were coming here.
This is interesting.
This is...
Ah, the rolling hills of Edinburgh. Why is everyone high?
Yes.
Why is there a windmill?
Why is there a windmill going on?
Yes. And other lovely, lovely things about Amsterdam.
William vanishes into the city. The ship continues on its way up to Edinburgh. Mm-hmm. As the ship approaches its destination, Thomas Geddes is increasingly perplexed by the letters that he has agreed to post. I mean, who is this odd man who seems to have the power to divert a boat across the channel and then just disappear into the Netherlands?
Yes, so what, but can't post his own
but
letters.
Can't post his own letters. Yeah. What's going on? There's something weird. So as soon as he arrives, he takes the letters to the police.
He's definitely read the letters as well. Let's all just agree. Let's all just kind of go, oh no, they accidentally fell open. I'm like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I accidentally steamed them open over a kettle. His description of the man is curiously similar to that of the missing Deacon Brodie. The authorities read the letters and found that he is rather foolishly, very foolishly, given his past sort of carefulness, given his mistress the address he is staying in Amsterdam.
Oh, for God's sake. maybe he cares.
Well, exactly.
You know,
he's got a family. He's got children. So, absolutely. So yes. he cares about them. So he wants to receive a letter back or something.
Or
so,
maybe she's going to bring the goods.
Who knows? But this is the address where he is. It's all curious enough for the police to start searching William's house.
Yeah.
And there they find a variety of wax impressions and forged keys, right, alongside items which the police know to have been reported stolen.
Yeah.
All found in William's house. They dispatch police to Amsterdam to bring him back. He has got some rather serious questions to answer now, really. He is found in Amsterdam in the process of arranging travel to the United States.
Oh, really?
Ooh, he's trying to get passage to the United States. If he had managed to sail, he would have been gone forever.
He would have disappeared, vanished.
Fortunately, they got to him first. He is arrested and returned to Edinburgh. Now, it would be an understatement to say that the trial of William Brodie was a big event in Edinburgh. The entire city comes to a standstill, really. It's the 27th of August, 1788. All levels of society... Everyone knows this man.
Yeah.
They queue and jostle to get a good seat, to get a standing room, anywhere that they can see this trial. What is going on?
Yeah.
No one can still quite believe that such a well-known, a respectable man could have lived this double life for 20 years. It's absolutely amazing to people.
It's amazing to me as well, actually, that everyone's an idiot.
Yeah.
Apart from us. Obviously, if we were there, we would be the first idiots. Kind of going, nothing that he's done wrong.
But the evidence is there. The items found in his home, the witnesses that have previously been laughed away, and now they're going, I fucking told you.
Told you.
Told you so. Plus, John Brown and Anthony Ainslie, they had both turned King's evidence. And yeah, they were all going against their former boss. Both William Brodie and George Smith. George Smith stood with him, the English locksmith. Oh, they were both found guilty of multiple burglaries and thefts and sentenced to hang. Both men were hanged on the 1st of October in front of a crowd of 40,000 spectators. William arrives at the gallows immaculately dressed. He is in his absolute finery.
Love it.
There. And he bows graciously to those he knows in the crowd. There's so many there that he recognises. His old friends are there and he's there.
Hello.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming.
It's a delight to see you.
Jesus. I mean, you're going to go.
You're going to go. Absolutely. A rumour persists that William had arranged with his captors that he was to wear an iron collar round his neck.
Right, yeah.
To protect him from the rope. And it is true that unlike tradition at the time where the dead man was left to hang, he was whisked away pretty damn sharpish after the gallows dropped. The doctors pronounced to the crowd that William was dead. But the rumours didn't stop.
Yeah.
The rumours say that he was revived. And many people say that they saw him in Paris.
Of course.
Many, many, many years later, he managed to escape to Paris and he lived to a ripe old age with all his plunder. A more likely version, though, is that, yes, he died on the gallows. And he is buried alongside his partner in crime, George Smith, in an unmarked grave that now sits beneath a car park in Edinburgh.
Aww.
Which is a sad end to...
Well, he's a bit of a shit. Quite a cavalier.
Man. There's an interesting side note to this story.
Oh, yeah?
The tale of this dual life of William Brodie fascinated Edinburgh for years and years and years after. How could such a seemingly good man by day turn into this fiend by night?
No.
Robert Louis Stevenson, who was born in 1850, grew up hearing stories about William Brodie. His father owned pieces of his furniture that he had made. As a teenager, Stevenson wrote a play about the man called Deacon Brodie or The Double Life.
Oh, The Double Life.
Ooh. It was an absolute flop. It
didn't do so well.
It did not do well, but the idea of a man living two lives. Stuck in his mind. And eventually, in 1884, it was the inspiration behind the classic The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Oh, my God.
The tale of Deacon William Brodie.
Deacon William Brodie. Oh, that is great. I love that. Robbie Louis Stevenson was going, you know what? This needs more monsters.
More monsters.
We need more potions and people doing Dr. Jekyll. Jekyll's pronounced it. Yeah. Oh, what a great story.
It's a good story.
I didn't know that was the inspiration.
Yeah. No, apparently so.
Double life. Love it. Love it.
And very, very, very famous in Scotland. There's a street named after. Yeah. After his... William Brodie's father, I think, with a street there, and there are pubs and taverns that he was meant to have visited and stayed in and things like that. So, yeah, huge. There are whole trails you can do of like William Brodie trail around Edinburgh and things.
Very wrong places. Yeah. It just goes to show, though, you know, if you've got the confidence and if you've got if you're highfalutin in society. And then everyone's like, oh, no, he could do no wrong. Obviously, he can't. And then just like, yeah, no, I'll just rob you blind. It's fine. But clearly, it seemed like he was the kind of person... Because of the gambling addiction as well, it was the thrill.
Oh, completely.
The thrill. Less the money. I mean, the money helps. Obviously, he had
a lot of expenditure. He's got two families, gambling debts and things.
But he wants to do it well.
But he wants to do it, exactly.
Yeah, because if he'd been desperate, then he probably would have robbed them quite quickly. As I said, and then you corrected, is that, you know, he'd got the key and then be in there immediately to try and fund whatever debts.
Yeah.
Yeah, try and pay those off.
But no, it's very well planned out and thought out and considered. Absolutely.
Oh, wow. What a great story. Well done, Nick.
Thank you.
You did it.
Hooray.
On a vat of wine.
On a bucket of wine and a cocktail.
Marvellous. What a great tale. Well, what do you think, people? What do you think of the tale of Deacon William Brodie? Did you know this story before? Are you from Scotland? Do you know of it well? Is it still told in taverns and in streets of old? There's a lot of really good walks and history walks up in Edinburgh. Did you know it? Have you got thoughts and theories about why he was able to get away with things? I think it's pretty cut and dried. But also, was everyone in there an idiot, or were they all just turning a blind eye? Because this is going to be more trouble than it's worth to bring down our council and kind of, we've elevated this man to the top of society, and now don't we look foolish? Tell us what you think. Jump on the comments of this episode. Wherever you listen to it, tell us your thoughts, your theories, your feelings, your musings. What would you do? What position would you take to have a double life? What would be your day job? And then what would you like to have a double life evening?
I like that.
That's good. Maybe that's a Q&A question for us in the future. Like, put some thought into it. Yeah, what do you do by day? What do you do by night? Can be criminal or it could be anything you like, quite frankly.
Indeed.
Please let us know. That we'd love to hear your suggestions of that. Maybe we'll build some cocktails around it. But when you are musing all of these things, you must mix up death and taxes.
I mean, it's gone down well, but my God, my brain is all over the place.
How are you feeling, by the way?
It's interesting. It's interesting. I also have had a bottle of wine as well at the same time.
Well, you're about to finish one.
Yeah, so...
You did very well, sir. You did very, very well. I really enjoyed that. I sipped that very slowly all the way through the episode, and it's made me feel a bit better.
Marvellous. Actually,
it was either going to kill me or it was going to dull some senses, which is what I needed, I feel. Could die in a minute. I haven't tried standing up, but it is delicious. I think most of the ingredients you should be able to access.
Nothing. There's nothing weird in there, absolutely.
You probably have them by now.
Yeah, probably got it by now, absolutely. Definitely give it a go, but make sure you're sitting down.
Yes. If you're not mixing up a death and taxes, please send us pictures or information about the cocktails you are enjoying over the weekend. Non-alcoholic cocktails are also welcome as well. A few people have been asking, do we do non-alcoholic cocktails? No, is the honest answer.
Sinead does sometimes.
And did one that one dark, dark January.
It was a terrible, terrible time.
It was a terrible, terrible time. I was grumpy and miserable the whole time. But we do understand that not everyone drinks on here. Yes, our cocktails are always going to be alcoholic. But if you've got suggestions of nice alternatives, we'd be happy to share them too. If you haven't already, please consider joining us on patreon.com. Follow us on social media, predominantly on Instagram, on YouTube, and on TikTok, where we tell extra stories and we have a lot of fun. And please leave us a 5-star review wherever you're listening to this podcast. Really, really helps the show. Leave reviews for any podcast you listen to, any books you're listening to, anything like that. Take 2 seconds and please support creators, because it's really important and we very, very much appreciate it.
We do.
Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisoner's cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.